Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes. We're going to start soon. So please take your seat, get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front or in a chair is also fine. Feet flat on the floor if possible, or simply find a way to sit that enables you to feel uplifted and dignified. So as we get started, I want to say a couple things about what makes our meditation practice here in the Open Heart Project different than other places you might go to learn meditation. And this is sort of part two of a conversation that started last week, where I suggested there were three things that you can do to keep your practice firmly rooted in the realm of the mysterious, the spiritual, the deeply transcendent, rather than the realm of self-improvement, self-help, self-aggression. There's something wrong with you. Maybe meditation can fix it. How do we keep our practice in the realm of the sacred, which, as far as I can tell, is where it's meant to truly live its deepest life? So, as mentioned, I suggested there are three steps last week. And usually when I do a video in multiple parts, I say you don't have to go back and listen. And you know what? You don't have to go back and listen, but it would be helpful if you missed that one, if you go back and do so. The first step was called make offerings. So when we begin our practice by offering something to our highest wisdom, to that which we aspire to, from the deepest place in our hearts, from our relationship with the divine, whatever you might call it, when we begin our practice by offering that practice to what we aspire to, it creates a kind of opening for wisdom itself to talk back to us. I hope that doesn't sound woo-woo or strange. But to contrast it, when we sit down on our meditation cushion with the idea of this better fix me, this should help me, I'm doing this because I want to be a better this, or okay, cool, it will make you a better this. But we've closed the loop of what is possible before we've even started. And my supposition, though I was not there because it was more than 2,500 years ago, when the Buddha taught meditation, he didn't say, this will make you a better leader, or even this will help you get a better night's sleep. He probably said something more like, this will help you wake up. This will help you see reality clearly. This will help you know what is beyond conventional knowing. So if those things are of interest to you, and I believe they are, these three steps support that view of meditation. So there are certain views of meditation, the same practice that we're going to do, basically. It's not the technique isn't necessarily different, although there may be small technical differences. But the view behind the practice is, depending on if you learn on a Vipassana retreat or in a Zen center or transcendental meditation or mindfulness-based stress awareness reduction, they just sort of take different views, and they're all valuable, I would say. So one view is that you have difficult problems and meditation can fix them. And you know who else says that? Science. Science says, we've proven it. It's helpful. Thank you, science. Very grateful. Okay, I have afflictions that meditation can help me let go of. View number one. View number two says, and you may have noticed this yourself, or if you haven't, I believe you will, that as our practice takes root, as we sit for more days, weeks, months, years, whatever it might be, something happens in here, in our hearts, that may be unexpected, at least it was to me. It softens. We open. And we actually feel more rather than less. Often we, and I include myself here, I want to meditate because I want to feel less pain, less anger, less all difficult things. Okay, well, sometimes it helps with that, but it also actually expands the emotional spectrum. And not just as far as being attuned to my own feelings, but my attunement to your feelings also deepens. So that's a second view of meditation. It's a path to compassion. It's a path to love. Also true, also useful. Now there's a third view that says afflictive, yep. Compassion, yay. But meditation in this view also says everything that arises, everything, every thought, every feeling, every hair on your head, every observation, every moment contains innumerable opportunities to wake up completely and become fully liberated from suffering. I'm going to have to take everyone's word for that, not having achieved it myself. But this view says we live in a world of magic, not of yay, everything's great magic, but the magic of reality is fully intact. I know this might sound weird, and you are part of it. Everything is awake. Everything is connected. And when we see that, when we go beyond seeing it to know it, we become a Buddha. We are awake. We are liberated from suffering and therefore able to help others to do so as well. So this view says, step beyond conventional notions and discover something very deep and real about who you are and about what your life means. I don't know what those things, the answers are, but meditation practice in this view says this practice will help you find that. So the three views, they'll help you solve problems, they'll make you nicer, which or more compassionate, which is not the same as nicer. It will introduce you to brilliance and magic. Now, the way I was trained was in the third view. Therefore, what I offer you in these videos for now, lo, these 10 or so years, is rooted in that view. My intention for myself and my hope to offer you is a little pathway to stay with that view if you want. This pathway has three steps on it. And the first one is called make offerings, which we talked about last week. So these are very, I would say, ordinary. They're not weird spell casting magic things necessarily, magic in the weird woo-woo sense. But when you make an offering, you're sort of saying, hey, greater wisdom than my own, how are you today? I'd like to give you my practice. And sometimes my practice is really strong and sometimes it's really stupid. Sometimes I'm really strong. Sometimes I'm really stupid or grumpy or mean or beautiful, whatever it is. I offer all of that to my practice. Now, the traditional way to indicate an offering is what's behind me, a shrine table with things on it, pictures of teachers who inspire you or beautiful objects. Candles, incense, all these things behind me mean something very personal to me. But that's, so what? If you want to have such a table, which you are invited to, you don't have to, but you certainly can, it should be meaningful to you. So very personal is the seed syllable of the sacred journey. Now, the second step that we're going to talk about today, and if you're in a hurry, by the way, and you want to just skip to the meditation, there's a time code in here somewhere. Please feel free to jump ahead. The second step is called request blessings. Who are you making these offerings to? That's just step one. But then, okay, here, hey, y'all, here's something. Here, I'll give you this. And you know what? Could you help me? I request your blessings. And traditionally, blessings are requested of lineage holders, your lineage holders, not mine. So one of the powerful and important, and I would say beautiful things about our meditation practice is we're not trying to culturally appropriate anything. I happen to have been trained in Tibetan Buddhist tradition. So I have Tibetan Buddhist-y things, images on my shrine. They're very personally meaningful to me, but I'm not trying to be Tibetan. And I'm not trying to pretend like anything, I hope. Nonetheless, the heart connection is potent and real and strong for me with those teachers. That's why they're on my shrine. What connections are potent and real and true for you? So, in other words, what is your lineage or lineages? Because usually it's more than one, especially for those of us in the Western world. So think big here. Think creatively. Who and what inspires you? What do you feel most deeply connected to? And some even maybe kind of longing, if only I could be like that person, like that culture, like those, that way of doing things. Those things that you long for are your lineage. Otherwise, you would not long for them. They would not strike you as, that's the best thing ever. So when you think about your lineage and you request their blessings, and I'll say in a moment a little bit more about how to make that request or those requests, think of spiritual teachers, if they've helped you from whatever tradition. Who has given you wisdom? Who has shown you kindness? Who do you aspire to be like? Who do you wish you could be like? Like, that's the best. So again, maybe it's religious figures or spiritual figures that comprise your lineage or part of your lineage. But maybe you also identify very strongly culturally with your genetic lineage, whatever it might be. Who are your ancestors? Do you feel connected to them? Do you wish you felt connected to them? Now we have another lineage. And it's very important that if you take this step of making offerings and requesting blessings and so on, that your ancestors are included, not mine, yours. They're here anyway. And I don't mean that in a weird woo-woo way. I'll just say that again. They're in your blood. They're in your heart. They're in your way of being. You may like that, in which case, bring them on closer. You may think, I don't want any part of that. Okay, you don't have to think about it again. You don't have to include them. But if you have some wish to bring your ancestors in, you can do that. And it would be lovely if you wanted to. However, lineage can go beyond blood and teachings and beliefs to include whatever you feel connected to in your heart of hearts. Maybe you are of the lineage of artists, scientists, parents, friends. Maybe you think friendship is the greatest gift you have to offer and to be a friend is the best thing you can be. That's a lineage. Maybe you're the lineage of rebels, the lineage of activists, thinkers, the lineage of people who have no lineage. So when you sit down to practice, you make your offerings either by just making this internal gesture of, here, this is who I am. I hope this is useful. I don't know how, but I offer it anyway. Or you light your candles, whatever it is. Then you think of your lineage holders and you ask them, you imagine them here in some way, not really here, but here. So again, for me, I think of my Buddhist teachers. I think of the lineage of Guru Rinpoche, Padmasambhava. I think of Tulkutundav Rinpoche. Think of my own meditation teacher, Sam. Great teachers who have assisted me. Oh, how did I get to deserve that? I cannot tell you, but they helped me so much, and I owe almost my whole life to them. So, okay, Buddhist teachers, but then there are also ancestors and artists and musicians and friends who I feel so inspired by, and they're over here. So when I sit to practice, I rouse some sense of we're doing it together. We're doing it together. Now, in the traditional sense, the way you request blessings is you say their names. So, for example, in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition that I was trained in, you might ask Guru Rinpoche, who I just mentioned, Padmasambhava, by offering a supplication. In the northwest of the land of Udayana, on a blooming lotus flower, you have attained supreme wondrous city, and so on. You are renowned as Padmakara, which is another name for Guru Rinpoche or Padmasambhava. Okay, that's cool for me. Nobody else has to do it. Then there are other lineage holders in the Tibetan world that have influenced me. And so there's a different supplication for those lineage holders. And you literally say their names. Great Vajradhara, Tilo, Naro, Marpa, Mila, et cetera, and so on. And then there's a further line in that particular chant that says, I hold your lineage. Grant your blessing. I'm requesting the blessings so that I will follow your example. I hold your lineage. Now, I may think I'm good enough. I may think I'm not good enough. Probably both are true. Nonetheless, here I am, and I want to do you honor. Grant your blessing so that I will follow your example. So you could name your lineage holders in your mind. You could write their names on a piece of paper. You just say their names, whatever they are. Mom, Dad, Missy, Biff, Rilke, Albert Einstein, whatever you identify with. I hold your lineage. Grant your blessing so that I may follow your example. And it doesn't even have to be words. You can request blessings wordlessly. But first, there's some sense of here we are together. And I open my heart and mind to receive blessings. And I ask for those blessings from my lineage. So I hope you can see here two things that are most important. One is it has to be personal. So no matter how many classes you take, classes are great. No matter how good of a student you are and how able you are to recite very powerful and profound teachings, doesn't matter. What matters is, can you find it here? Can you find a way to connect to it personally? At that point, the path opens up. It's very important. In fact, it's of vital, essential, critical importance that your practice be personal. And that when you make offerings or request blessings, that it's personal, that it makes sense to you. So the second thing I want to point out, and then we'll go to our practice, is both of these first steps and the third, which we'll talk about next week, much simpler than the first two. Make offerings, request blessings. Almost the first internal gesture is I take my mind off of myself alone and I place it in the environment. I try to make a relationship to wisdom, not my own smarts, not what I know, but to primordial pre-existing wisdom that on my very best days will talk to me and show me things and help me. So we make the offerings here. We request the blessings. None of this has anything to do with fixing myself, being deserving, undeserving, knowing enough, being a good meditator. None of that matters. None of it. None of it. What matters is you open your mind to communication with the phenomenal world, which according to many wisdom traditions is always wants to talk with you. So I hope that doesn't sound grandiose, because these things are very simple. You light some candles, you think of people who inspired you, you say, could use some help? Would you help me? And then you do your practice, which we're going to do right now. So this is a long-winded, I would say, way of describing how in the Open Heart Project, our view of meditation is different. or is particular. There are other meditators, of course, who view it this way, but it's not secular. It's not self-help. It's not religious. And it's not about getting anywhere. It's about discovering the magic of being right here, which is at the heart of every one of the world's mystical traditions. At the same time, y'all, it will help you get a better night's sleep. It will make you a better leader, make you more patient. All of those things are true too. But if you're interested in this deeper root, something that you can't see right now, the mysteries, the meaning, the depth of what is possible in your life, this view will support that. Wow, I really went out there with this talk, y'all. I hope it's useful. And we're going to practice, which is the foundation for the whole journey. And the practice, by the way, is sitting there doing nothing. So let's practice that. So please relax in your body as it is. Beautiful aches and pains. Things you love, things you don't love, ordinary, whatever, your body. Just relax with all of that. Sit up straight. The best of your ability, if you have neck things or back things, adjust. Let the hands rest on the legs, palms down. And feel your own warmth. And really let the hands settle. Nothing to do right now. Just rest. Let the belly relax. Let the shoulders soften. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. And let all the muscles of speech relax. The jaw, the tongue, the throat. The breath is natural in and out through the nose. Meaning just, you already know how to breathe, so no further instruction is necessary. The eyes are open because we are practicing being awake. And the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And see if you can direct your gaze into the middle distance. Somehow, so there's a sense of vision mixing with space. And let the brow soften. Let your attention come to rest on the breath, which does not mean observe the breath, it means feel the breath. Feel the body breathing in and out. Let your attention come all the way in with the inhale and dissolve all the way out on the exhale. At the end of the exhale, there's a tiny gap, a rest in a musical sense. And then the next inhale just happens the amount of effort required of you is zero. So just begin again, feeling that inhale, this exhale, gap, again. That's all you have to do. The mind will continue to make thoughts, no problem. It's just what it does, not a big deal. No effort to stop thinking or change thinking, ixnay, ixnay. Just let your thoughts be as they are. 100% of them come and go. You don't have to worry about it. Your primary attention is on the breath. However, should you notice that your primary attention has somehow become absorbed in thought completely, not every little thought, but you got lost. Uh-oh, spaced out. That's really good, actually, because you woke up. So the instruction here is notice that. Label that moment silently, thinking. Let go. That's the fun part. Just let go. Gently come back and begin again. Feeling the body breathe. And the amount of times that you are allowed to come back in any given meditation session is infinite. Infinite. So you can relax. And we'll sit together in silence for a few minutes until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. Thank you for being on a journey. It's important. See you next week.